Johnny Best, cause you're only the man, and the man's got to cook the bacon. Try to be tough when you're going the nuts, cause you got a bad dough to take it. History of itself, trying your zine. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dreams. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best. Thank you, Joe Esposito, for the theme song. Great singing. The Z Cap Figure Podcast, episode 28. 27. You sure? Yeah?
Yeah, we're 27.
All right. Episode 27. I'm Ryan DiPolo. And you're Tom McLaughlin.
No, we're 28, actually.
Yeah, I knew it. Dingy. This is how long it's been. Sorry, guys. So, it's episode 28. You know, like little Christmas holiday, except for me. But Tom had a holiday. He was in Florida. He saw a lot of fat people on the fat carts, right?
Yeah, fat people on rented wheelchairs.
Fat people
with baskets,
like the with baskets, because they can't be bothered to hold anything while they push a button to walk. Like, I don't want to have to carry stuff.
Well, they need the basket because of all the shit they buy.
Oh, because of all the $80...
$100 Gryffindor robes.
The magic wand from the Harry Potter world that costs $80, and it's literally a stick that does things at certain parts of the park. So, anyways, this is episode 28. I don't know who's a good 28. Maybe Wayne Gretzky. I think that's what they called him, the great one, 28. Or Jeff Saturday. Jeff Saturday. I'm making stuff up. I have no clue. Who's a 28?
Jeff Conine.
Perfect. Thank you for bailing me out. So we're continuing our MLB look at, which look again at it. Is the name I blurted out day one of our sophisticated series where we go through each team in baseball one by one for each episode next couple months. And today we're going to be looking at and in our look at the Cleveland Indians. So yeah, that'll be really exciting. We have that in store for you. We're gonna look at them.
Super exciting.
So I blurted that name out, and then now we're just committing. You know, that's how we do with the Cap Figure Podcast.
We're but all in.
We're sorry. Tom is back from Florida. I'm back from nowhere, and that's it. Second Avenue Subway opened. It's people are cranky already. It's been 5 days and they're already miserable again, but that's it. So you good to go?
I'm ready.
You good to go, bro?
Yes, sir.
All right. So the Cleveland Indians, we'll start with what they did last year, and then we're going to talk about them going forward in their offseason. What was their story last season, or their records the last 3 years or whatever?
Yeah, so starting in 2014, the Indians were 85-77. 2015, 81-80, and then this past season they were 94-67. They won the AL Central, went on to win the AL pennant, and obviously came within probably the closest margin you can to winning the World Series.
Extra innings in Game 7.
Yeah, it's as close as you can get. The Indians were an interesting team last year because I think baseball insiders kind of knew that there was the talent there, but I believe going into the season that most people would have picked the Kansas City Royals in that division. So I don't think they were even the favorites coming into the year.
No,
so.
But they did have a high total number of wins, more than I thought. I looked it up. Going into last season, their over-under on wins was 87, actually, which is way more than I thought it would have been.
That's telling.
That insiders knew and Vegas knew, but I don't think the public knew. But even in 2015, when they were down the year, because of their pitching and how good Carlos Carrasco was and stuff, people throughout the year were like, oh, the Indians could get it. When it was that period in the AL when the Rangers ended up making it in 2015, they ended up winning the division. But you know what I'm saying? In 2015, it was like what team out of nowhere could come out of nowhere, and the prediction was a year early. So anyway, so why did they do well last year or whatever? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously, you know, like with any organization that finally takes that next step, it starts from the top down with the front office, the way they design this team. It's a small market team, so they obviously knew for a couple of years now that you have
that
to
no
build.
Fans would come.
Well, that you have to build from within, and that starts with the draft.
Mm.
They were able to put together, you know, a homegrown, a very solid staff of, you know, Corey Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, and Salazar. Most of those guys they actually traded for, who were pitchers who just didn't necessarily put it all together with their initial team. So that obviously speaks to the strength of their scouting department as far as pitching is concerned. Then obviously, you know, you have young stars like Francisco Lindor and Jason Kipnis.
Who are top picks, right? First and second round picks.
Exactly.
And then even Nyquan and Lonnie Chisenhall were first round picks who are contributing, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when we looked at them in the Cubs in the World Series, and it's like it's not really a surprise that these teams are carried by hitting on big picks, which is more and more obviously the trend in baseball. Like we talked about with the Braves, you know, two episodes ago, and the Marlins even last week. I mean, it's funny because before the show you were saying that their last season was good. Where did they rank in like hitting and pitching? Like I guess I would expect them to be real good at both, but better at pitching. And yeah. Then once they're in the playoffs, they're pitching injuries with Salazar and Carrasco seemed devastating when they entered the playoffs, and then went on this sort of now typical but still semi-surprising run in the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, looking at the team rankings, they were 7th in OPS, so that's probably the best metric hitting-wise. So they're a top 10 team hitting. Starting pitching, they're ERA was 7th overall. I was kind of a little bit shocked it was even that high, but the only reason it's probably that high is because they're an AL team. If they were in the NL, they would have obviously
Not that their ranking is high, that the number itself, that their ERA was that high, you mean? You thought they'd be better at pitching, you're saying?
Yeah, I thought they would be like a top 3 team
because
they're in the AL, it's that much more difficult. But then when you go to relief pitching, you know, they're 4th overall in ERA. You know, I think this team kind of just had, you know, a lot of breaks go their way. They obviously had the foundation to make it happen. I think the other teams in their division were just either overrated or, like in the case of the Royals, they just had, you know, a lot of injuries and players didn't get into their grooves. The Indians are the real deal, though, and they solidified the team at the deadline. They got Miller, who was the MVP of the playoffs overall, in my opinion.
Right, and it's amazing that they're ranked 4th in relief pitching, having only had him, you know, less than half the season.
Yeah, I mean, Shaw and Allen were the other two arms.
I mean, I actually cut Cody Allen in fantasy because he was blowing some saves early in the year, like as all closers do, and then he got it together. And anyway, obviously Andrew Miller and his playoffs were amazing. I didn't like their moves. I still don't know. I mean, I guess because they got to the World Series. Like, in hindsight, them giving up, what's his name, the redhead and that other
Clint
dude.
Clint Frazier.
I keep forgetting his name, who was a big hitting prospect, right? A first-round pick.
Yeah, he was like a 3rd overall pick and was on the right track. He's still very young.
So
they also gave up Justice Sheffield, who's the starting pitcher to the Yankees. He's like a top 100 prospect.
So, yeah, so they paid a price for Andrew Miller as he was worth. But, like, I wonder if they would only, like I guess making and losing the World Series is as worth it as you could expect to get from it. Or when you make a move like that and pay that price, are you, like, just all in, like, are you like, if we don't win a World Series because of this move, it's a bust? Or like, I mean, I don't think you could really make moves thinking like that. I don't think that's realistic. I think that's a more of a fan perspective to be like, either we win a World Series or this move is useless. Like, I guess from a financial standpoint, which we'll talk about in a minute with them going forward, I guess it's worth it if they get a boost in attendance and if going forward, you know, this season, winning a pennant is still a big deal. And kids in the city, even if they don't make it back there for another 20 years, will remember the year, the run they had, and the year they went to the World Series. So on that level, it may or may not be worth it. I guess it depends on how much money they have to spend in the future. Because like you said, and when you're starting to analyze the way their team is built, if they're giving away top picks for 1 or 2 years of production and they're going to have a small payroll, that doesn't work. Those are two opposing, you know, strategies. Forces, yeah. But it seems like they're all in on making an effort to win, which now I guess will segue to the offseason. So now this offseason, they surprisingly ended up signing Edwin Encarnacion after he didn't get a deal for anyone. They sort of came out of nowhere. Nobody really expected them. They were mentioned in it as maybe upgrading DH or whatever, because Edwin got 3 years, $60 million with a 20-year, fourth-year team option, right? And that's way less than he was looking for, what the Blue Jays even offered him. So this deal is pretty surprising, but that's their major story of the offseason, obviously, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the mainstream sort of story out there. I think it's a huge win for them. They kind of just capitalized on the market.
Right. Would you say that, like, going into the offseason, if you're the Indians, pretend that you don't know Edwin is going to be this cheap. Like, what would have been your goal or strategy going into the offseason?
I think that they had very limited means. You know, I think their goal was probably to re-sign Mike Napoli at first base. And then I think they desperately needed to add, you know, some sort of depth in their outfield, maybe round out the catcher position, although that kid who played catcher for them in the playoffs,
Roberto Perez,
was pretty good.
He's still listed as ahead of Yan Gomes on their depth chart, actually.
So, I mean,
he played really well. He single-handedly won one of those games in the ALDS against the Red Sox, like, but when he had the sack fly, like he didn't hit the sack fly. He took second on a sack fly.
Yeah.
Like he tagged up from first to second and then ended up scoring, and then that was the 6-5 game. And he had great blocks when the pitchers were off. Anyway, I guess you could say that they would like to upgrade a catcher. Everybody would. I guess you could say that really the outfield. I would agree with you. But then, surprisingly to everybody, they were smart enough, like the Rangers last year with Ian Desmond, even though they didn't need that, so to speak, that position upgrade. They're just aware enough to take a good deal when it came, huh? And we both like Edwin's profile as a hitter, obviously. And now you can put Carlos Santana at first base, right? And he plays a good enough first base. He hit 34 home runs last year. He walks 100 times a year. I think it's fine. My first thought was like, oh, what about, you know, there's these two fat guys who don't like to always run to first. You know, there's only room for one big poppy type guy, but maybe there'll be two.
Yeah, I mean, Santana's, I guess...
he's the big dick in the clubhouse now?
No, I mean, he could play, like, a bunch of different positions. So I think it's just...
His dick is bigger, you mean?
No, I don't. He's just, like, he's just a much better overall player and adds to, like, what they need in terms of their team. They need power.
Well, Carlos Santana used to play catcher and third also. Like, I think that he has more positional versatility.
That's what I said.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And, I mean, that bat is exactly what they needed. They also get Mike Brantley back, so.
Yeah, that's what's so crazy about their last year is that, like, they had such a good year with no Brantley. And all year, from spring training on, it was like, when are we going to get him back? Maybe he can play the field. But that was the story, and that actually I didn't know in the season that you couldn't DH for I didn't know you could only DH for the pitcher. I thought he is the reason I looked up. And found out that obviously you can't DH for a position besides pitcher because they said he was ready to play in the field and his fielding was fine, but he couldn't hit, which was funny to me. I was like, would you ever just put in a defensive specialist and let Bumgarner hit? But anyway, so they get him and Carrasco and Salazar back.
Yeah, I think also from a high level, that's the most amount of money they've spent on a free agent ever, $60 million, which when you look at the contracts around the league, that's nothing. But so that kind of speaks to, like, you know, the franchise is heading in sort of a different direction. They have a window. They need to capitalize. That was a great value for a player. I still think they would have paid Napoli $10 million. It's totally worth it to, you know, give him that money. And then you have a lot of control over players. You know, Lindor has 5 more years at basically slave wages. And you know, same with someone like Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, who's really good. You know, a funny thing on him, Jose Ramirez, he was way better than I thought. His fielding wasn't good, but whatever, because Uribe's out with a nut injury and he's not on the team anymore, I don't think. But it's funny, I was looking at Jose Ramirez. He had a 333 BABIP last year and hit 312, and then in 2015, 233. So 100-point difference in BABIP, and instead of 312, he hit 219. So oh, wow. Who knows? So he's probably somewhere in the middle, but even still, that's he had a 3.9 WAR last year. That, you know, a two and a half win player is half a win above average. Like he's good enough for the rest of that lineup. You know, like he's a contributor. I really like their offense. Obviously, I love that. Like I've always loved Carlos Santana. I love that they have the switch hitters. I love that Kipnis is a lefty. We love Edwin. You know, I like Nyquin's bat, but I don't like his defense, obviously. And this is another point I wanted to make about their team going forward. As you referenced, their outfield needs some addressing because, you know, like Nyquin is a good controllable hitter, but they got away with – it reminded me of the Mets with Daniel Murphy that, like, you get away with this great hitter at this position all year that's not so good at defense, and then it cost them both in the playoffs with Nyquin blowing some of those plays.
Yeah.
And Murphy, you know, you can push it as far as you can go. The difference being, though, that Murphy still is excusable at second, and maybe Nyquin doesn't have a future at center field. You know, right. Who knows? But as of now, that's where they have him slotted, which is funny to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that organizationally, you see a lot of players that can play at different spots.
Like, hey, I guess if they think they can, he can contribute, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. And, you know, they have a prospect named Bradley Zimmer who's on the verge of the majors. He's a switch hitting center fielder.
So oh, I like those things.
He's, I think, a top 30 prospect by like all the ranking services.
No
so.
Big deal. A top 30 switch hitting center fielder. Yeah, no biggie. They grow on trees.
Oh, they, you know, Clint Frazier. So, I mean, that makes that trade a little bit more recognizable to me because...
A little more palatable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't want to trade Clint Frazier, but the Miller deal did put them over the top. I thought it was interesting, too. The owner of the Indians sold part of the team this offseason, which was another reason why they were able to spend the money they were.
Well, you think it might be the only reason, you said, right? That, like, that's why they gave the biggest deal that they've ever given. Like, that they might not otherwise have been in that position to...
Exactly.
I guess if you're 100% of taking the risk in a business, it's just simple, versus you just already cashed out a little bit, then you feel free to take more risks, right?
Yeah, definitely. So if you look at the money that the owners are going to get, it's either from the cash flows that they get from sales of tickets directly from ad revenue. But then the bigger piece is the team valuation, which is, you know, we just added a World Series. We have a young roster. So, you know, the business is heading up. So our valuation will go up significantly. So that's the way for the owner to cash out part of that. So now he's less concerned with, you know, maybe running a deficit for a year where they have a abnormally high payroll and they can't bring in that much money. That's less important. So it's a good thing that he sold part of that team. He timed it very well, obviously, on the heels of a World Series.
But did he? Because they had such bad attendance. Well, and I know this is what you're getting at also, is that, like, you know, the Indians were 28th out of 30, I believe, in attendance all of last year. Like, and now they have a year where they go to the World Series. They have exciting young players. Like, they're not a team like the Yankees last year or 2 years ago or the Brooklyn Nets or something, where it's old player success. It's the combo of young, exciting players, and they're doing well. And now the owners spend money, and they're willing to make a really good deal for, like, the second most exciting hitter in the market this offseason besides Yoenis. Maybe I'm a little biased. This will show, like, what the market may be capable of, has been pointed out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if this lag in drawing doesn't catch up, then like you were saying before we were on air, then that just shows that Cleveland is a black hole. They're too broke there. The rust belt is too rusty. Everybody, you hate Cleveland. It's snowy. You know, you're suicidal, and you can't go to a game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's just look. I pulled these numbers. This is just fascinating to me. So they opened that new park, I believe it was like in 1997.
Yeah,
so the
Jacobs
years,
Field.
Yeah, now it's Progressive Field.
What are they,
yeah,
liberal? What are they? What are they, liberal?
So those years, those peak years from like 97 to 2002, they were pushing over 3 million in average attendance.
Wow.
In 99 and 2000, they nearly missed 3.5 million.
That's a lot.
This
Dude,
year,
teams breaking 2 million is like a big deal.
They were like a huge success.
That's
when
crazy.
That field opened.
Just to give people a sentiment, like when teams break 2 million, they like announce it. Like,
yeah, it was huge. And
it's
now,
a big draw.
You know, you have 1.4 million
oh
in 14, 1.38 in 15.
Ew.
This year it was 1.6.
Ew.
Now, I would be more interested in seeing specific breakdowns because I feel like this could have even been a down year, but that 1.6, I mean, I'm sure down the stretch they were selling out. So
yeah,
the
yeah.
point I'm getting at is like the beginning of the season.
Well, but you would hope, but I guess
still
you're right.
A
I mean,
downturn in attendance.
But you know
year.
What, though? We're looking at it from the hindsight of that they went to the World Series. You know, people, given their injuries, even in the end of the season, might have not been that excited about the Indians still. You know, I forget always the perspective at the time because it's like, yeah, we're on pace to go to the playoffs, but we're probably not going to do much because Carrasco and Salazar are out.
You know, yeah.
So it might not be as much as we think. That I mean, that's low. 1.6 is that's really interesting. Why do you think those numbers could be? Do you have any answer?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think one thing that's very obvious from just the discussion we're having that just came to my mind
is that Cleveland sucks dick. No, I'm kidding.
Well, they're a very, you know, they need. The fan base needs to see success on the field for fans to come out. They are very volatile to the actual state of the team. When they have losing teams and there's nothing exciting, the fans just don't show
up.
You
mean specifically in Cleveland, you're saying?
Specifically in Cleveland,
I mean,
yeah.
It looks pretty clearly like that, right?
Which, that's not the case for every team, so that seems like a pretty obvious point, but
mm-hmm.
that really
no,
isn't the case.
No, that's not an obvious point, because it's not like that everywhere. But the Browns are like a counterexample, but I guess that's only 8 games a year, and that's another thing, sport to sport, just like as from a fan's perspective, buying season tickets or something like that. Football is a much easier commitment to make because it's only 8 games you're paying for a year, even though there's different types of packages and people buy one game things. I don't know. I think that it would make sense that I'm less likely to commit to splitting a ton of baseball games with a guy if it's not exciting. Football, you're always in it. You're always exciting, and it's only 8 games. But the Browns do draw, even though they've been the worst franchise in football since they've returned. So maybe it's not necessarily the city.
You know, another
own,
factor
knows?
Maybe is like, you know, there's a limited population in Cleveland, like any market.
No
and
way.
So
wait, you're telling me there's only a finite number of people in that city?
Yeah.
That is just
mind
so. Therefore,
blowing.
That means there's only a finite number of dollars.
Right.
Oh my God.
So the point I'm getting at is the Cavaliers have been on an upswing. So
mm.
a lot of the fans who have enough money to go to one game
oh.
might be choosing to go to the Cavaliers.
Peep out Bron.
Yeah.
Dude, those sneaky Gilberts, those sneaky, sneaky Quicken Loans Arena, that is pretty crazy, though. I wonder how long in general, like a new stadium, buzz, like the a new stadium being built is worth an attendance boost. I felt like in New York when both new stadiums opened in the same year that it was worth 1.5 seasons of like attendance.
Mm.
Like it's worth for people who don't really care about baseball, it's worth like one game at each stadium for 1 year of all people in the city, right?
Definitely, and so
that's it. That wears off pretty quick.
That's where you're drawing off the market too, right? Because like in New York, if you get one person to go to a game, each game at a new stadium in a market like
that's
New
a really
York,
good point.
That lasts for what, 5 years? How many?
I don't know.
Hundreds
I, yeah.
of millions
that's
of people.
That's a good point. Like if everybody wants to go to each checkout new stadium, you're right.
But yeah, I mean, like you can't ignore the fact. I mean, this isn't an economics show, so let's not get too far into it, but like business in Cleveland has just been deteriorating.
No.
All of their industries are going under, so you have less individuals willing to spend the money and you have less corporations willing to buy boxes, which will be, you know, 4 or 5 people each game, you know,
there are, and there are no corporations in Cleveland anyway. No, I'm kidding, but maybe not. Yo. So yeah, you're right. Let's get to, well, I'll act stupider than I am and not talk about economics. But this is what they need to do. They need to build more casinos in Cleveland, because I think if people could just hit red, then they would go to games more. Like if they could just win at the roulette or craps table, then they'd have the income. No.
Yeah, I think
adding, or play the chocolate cow, vanilla cow, strawberry cow slot machine, where the cows are different colors. Like this pizza guy, I used to deliver pizzas, and the Mexican cook, he would spend every penny. He just made pizza. I shouldn't even call him a cook. He would spend his whole paycheck at Empire City Casino in Yonkers every week. And I asked him, I said, Jose, you gamble every week? And he said, yeah, I go to Empire City. And I was like, what do you play there? They only have slots. He's like, I like the one with the chocolate cow, vanilla cow, and the strawberry cow. And I guess he meant one where they have different color cartoon cows, but pretty sad.
Yeah, so let's just add gambling addiction into like an overall, like,
don't they have casinos though? Like I picture Detroit and Cleveland as just like casinos and crackheads. Like I just think of it as hell,
you know. I can't speak to the downtown areas in either.
Wait,
but
make
like
judgments about these entire areas, Tom, please.
Let's
I'm
talk about
you.
Like Pittsburgh. I went to the game at Heinz Field.
That's a good depressing
there
place.
Was a huge casino in the parking lot of the Steelers and PNC Park.
That's
like literally right next to it, and all of the fans like were either tailgating or in the casino having like free drinks and then going over to the game.
Ha! That's really funny. That's a really smart combo.
I mean, I just hadn't seen anything like that, so to me I was like, wow, that's kind of like crazy, but
smart. I'm 90% sure there's a casino across from Quicken Loans Arena, like across from where the Cavs play.
Or very close to it.
Yeah. I'm 90% sure. I mean, it's called Quicken Loans Arena, so that just indicates like predatory lending, which therefore indicates a market for casinos. Payday loan. Get your payday loan now. You only got to pay back three times that weekly you salary. Why gamble it on the chocolate cow, vanilla cow, when you could when I could lend it to you and you pay me back right away times three. All right. So anyway, we're almost done. So how do you think so the Indians are the second favorite to come out of the AL this year? The Red Sox are 2.25 to 1. If you bet $100, like say you make some moves or whatever, you make some moves, whatever, save a little money, eat some ramen, you got $100. I think the Red Sox are going to win the AL. You get back 225. Then second, you bet on the Indians, the Indians, you get back 400. And then the Astros at 600, and then the Blue Jays, just for some perspective, at 1,000, aka 1,000.
1,000. Yeah, I feel like that's about right. You know, like this team, I think, is the clear favorite in their division. So I think, you know, we've talked a lot about
the Tigers are old.
We've talked a lot about how they sort of value these things in Vegas, and like to a certain extent, once you get in the playoffs, there's so much more variability. So to me, looking at that line, I think they're going to make the playoffs. So in that event,
that's a really big concession. And not only just make the playoffs, they're probably going to win that division. You're very smart. I mean, we already knew that. Obviously, you're very smart. That's why.
But that's a good line,
that's
too, because we've also talked about, right, you need starting pitching in the regular season to get to the playoffs, and then in the postseason, relief pitching takes precedence. This team can do both.
Yo, I'm going to bet on that. You just convinced me. I mean, the Red Sox are so good, potentially. I guess they're the scary part. But you're right. If you really think that they're going to win that division, which obviously there's so many variables, but you're right. It's just get in. Then just getting in, you if all teams are equal, you have a 1-in-4 chance, but whatever.
And if they win the division, they're not playing in the wild card.
Right. They have a better than 1-in-4 because three of the five. I keep thinking four, but so I think that's it. We're going to talk about the Astros next time, but before we go, there was something I wanted to ask you about, but I forgot. Oh my god, what is it?
It's the West.
No, what was it? Oh my god. Tell the story about your jacket and the
Terrible.
Carry on real quick.
Yeah, so I was taking a flight back on January 2nd to New York. Sold out flight. I have two carry-on bags. One is my backpack, another one is a bigger suitcase. So obviously the flight is sold out. I was in the last group to board. So I'm, getting to my row 8, and I look up and every overhead compartment is totally packed. Then you know, I'm standing, I look on the left, and there's one overhead compartment where there's literally just a jacket sprawled, taking up the entire section.
And a plastic bag,
and
right?
And a plastic bag filled with snacks.
That filled up the whole compartment.
Filled up the whole compartment.
Lay it out so it fills up the whole thing.
So I go, I say out loud, like, whose jacket is this? And this guy who literally was, he should have bought two tickets.
He was so fat, he literally asked for another seatbelt.
Yes,
I've never heard of another seatbelt.
He literally should have bought two tickets because it's unfair.
Can you restructure your plane's engineering? I'm too fat.
So I go, whose jacket is this? And he goes, he doesn't say anything. And then I'm like, all right, well, you know, can whoever's jacket this is hold on to it for a minute? And he goes, well, why would I do that?
And that's how you catch the culprit.
And I just...
like, well, whoever it is, will you hold it?
I just look at him. I'm like, are you serious? Like, it's a sold-out flight. Like, just hold on to it for a second while I put my stuff in. He goes, well, I'm not doing that. So I just took my stuff and threw it in. Then on the way to my seat, which was conveniently two rows behind, this gentleman goes... God, the manners on these kids today, in my whole 20 years of taking flights, I've never even seen it. What a jerk.
And you probably, hopefully you crushed all his snacks. All right, so that'll do it. I'm glad you wrinkled his jacket. Dude, that's like the balls to ask for the folds. I shouldn't even call them balls. The balls to ask for a new seatbelt because you're so fat. Like, you should be ashamed. You shouldn't be demanding that everybody else adjust to you. You should feel so uncomfortable that you want to adjust to everybody else.
Yeah.
It's like, can you redo your plane's engineering? My stomach is too fat from all this ice cream.
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet? And he asked the flight attendant four times how far they were, and it was from Florida to New York. Yeah. It's a two-hour flight.
How far away are we?
But kids these days.
Yeah, my parents, just no manners.
All right, so that's it. By the way, if you're white and you want to argue that the Indians logo shouldn't be that way, that's fine. You have a right to do that. But don't ever tell me it's offensive if you're not offended. You can say, I've heard Native Americans say it's offensive, and I maybe you want to hear them out. But don't ever, without talking to them, get your own opinion that you're offended by it, because you're not Native American, you dingy.
That's the best life lesson could ever learn. So just hit rewind 15 seconds, maybe even twice now at this point, and listen to that again.
Yeah.
It'll take you very far.
Deep. All right. Thank you, guys. Please leave a review, subscribe, bye.
Or don't.